The subject matter of our discussion today is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I have chosen, in order to impress upon the world and the audience everywhere, that my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, chose to address. Incidentally, yesterday in the email we had a news about and a survey that we discussed in the morning even, about people's belief in God. What do they think of God? In America, they took a survey by the sociologists and others, and they came with a very divided opinions. They may have selected only from Christianity or some section of the society in order to discern what God is. The results are so much divided, then they try to categorize in few things. Some may think, according to their own perception, that God may be, completely authoritarian. Somebody think that the God may be benevolent, another think something else. Angry God, that was another category. And the fourth one was thinking about the God to be, simply neglectful or so-called callous. That he is not concerned with the affairs of material world. Whatever. People have different perception according to the day-to-day affairs, what God is. They think he is one of us. A kind of supreme being. In America, if this is the situation, what to speak in the whole world? They don't think God to be something as God He is. Well, to define the Supreme Absolute Truth in personal form is not an easy job either. But if we have something to back up, and with a personal conviction, by developing that kind of character, if we try to reasonably put forward, not as a conception, but as a reality, then it does make a difference. So, in this reference, I would like to speak something. And our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, on the order of his spiritual master, came to the West to carry forward a disciplic succession that is unbroken from the time Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. And he shows an unbroken chain by which we can receive the truth which is intact without any deviation. After all, man is searching for his mentor, a creator, in order to satisfy his full inquiries, whatever is in his capacity. Everybody is trying to exhibit the nature of his soul, but maybe in a wrong medium, but it has to be exposed. So, the subject matter of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead was brought directly in the Western world for the first time in 1965, even though there were students of Bhagavad Gita existing and there are great thinkers and philosophers who spoke very highly. Henry David Thoreau, then even Abraham Lincoln. There are many, many great scholars in the West. Even Einstein, the scientist. They have given a good review. But still, in certain aspects only, not in totality. Christians believe in personal God. So, the Vedic thought. There is a misnomer to say that we are polytheistic, or Hinduism is contained polytheism. No, it is monotheistic religion. Because if you see the fundamentals of the instructions, it's telling about one and one only. But in other tradition, we may not be able to discern a personality because certain situations have been not dealt with. Even there are references in the Bible that Jesus Christ wanted to speak, but he thought that people are not ready to take such instructions. So he did not. I do not know exact passage, but this is referred many a times. But regardless, there is personal God. But the God is not like one of us. Avajananti mama mudha manushim tamam asritam param bhavam ajananta mama bhuta maheshwaram. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that when I descend in a human-like form, people think I'm one of them. So this survey was on the basis of people think that he is one of us, maybe in a better way. And within the purview of the human psychology, the God can be explained. But that is not the realm Bhagavad Gita exposes. That is not the realm Srimad Bhagavatam exposes. Because this is a study of great thinking, which is done out of voluntary inquisitiveness. It's not a forced upon situation. When that kind of practice will evolve humankind into a kind of civilization which makes everything, you know, satisfactory. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the treatise of the Absolute Truth written by the same author of Bhagavad Gita, and my Guru Maharaj coming in that tradition translated with the fervor of bhakti or pure devotion unto the one Absolute Personality. You know, as a summum bonum. And he presented to the Western world for the first time. And it really put up a kind of revolution in traditional thinking. Even in India, such thinking has become so much obscure. Even though they know person as Krishna, the personality aspect, and maybe casted amongst the hordes of demigods, or, you know, is one of the god, or there is also a parallel, and they will try to make two distinct personalities like Krishna and Ram. There is a lot of confusion. No straightforward thinking is there for a monotheistic aspect because of not coming through proper school of thought. People try to put their human element in God. They try to put human element in God. God is not a human being. God doesn't have a denomination. So, but then what kind of personality does he have? That people with short or very poor fund of knowledge try to explain God in their term without the reference of the standard scripture, then it will make certainly a mistake. Bible does point to the Supreme Person in many phases, but it's in an invisible form is there. But he can manifest as fire in the bush. He can manifest as personality and can also manifest in the form of the teachings that a pure person can convey, that is through the medium of Jesus Christ. So, for the Supreme, everything about him, his knowledge, his form, his attributes, the qualities, his authority, everything is identical with him. In other words, when these things are manifested, the manifestation is also representation of his energies. In other words, we say, how do you prove when God is existing? Do you have any proof? Do you have any proof that God exists? Yes. Because his energies are manifested, therefore we can propose that he is existing, all energetic. What are these manifestations of energy? They are called opulences. There are six opulences discerned by great thinkers in a very harmonious ways. The first, all power, all knowledge, all beauty, all
strength.
Renunciation and one more.
Fame.
95% in that survey they were believing God. It's all famous. But that is the manifestation of one of the opulences. And we, as part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, acquire or want to acquire all these six to become famous. Or we think if we have little amount, we will become perfect. Because he is perfect. We are trying to make ourselves perfect. Right? That's also the inclination has been given. It's a command. Be perfect because your Father in the heaven is perfect. That is the teaching of Jesus Christ. But how do we now do it? Unless and until these perfections are revealed by the Supreme Lord, even though he is beyond the purview of our senses, he is transcendental to them. Then nature, that the transcendental aspect should manifest. And they are manifested by his teachings. Therefore, the entire constitution or the configuration of the Supreme Absolute Truth is transcendental in nature, not what we think through our sensual perceptions. Not we think according to our sensual perception. Now, all these six opulences, when they are manifested, then who is that personality? How would you name him? The name is identical with the personality. Krishna means the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, who is all attractive in all the six opulences, completeness. Whatever he exhibits in his earthly pastimes and revelations to the great thinkers is also to be taken into account. There are great, great professors of religion in the traditions, all different traditions, with different theories, have come to the conclusion of one personality of Krishna, like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Nimbark, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You name it, they wouldn't contradict. That the whole aspect has to be considered on the basis of the transcendental attributes. Therefore, he has to reveal. A man alone on his own cannot know about himself unless and until he has been given the instructions by the Lord personally or through his representatives. There is no possibility. Therefore, this study about the Absolute Truth, Personality of God is coming in the disciplic succession. It has to be carried in very intact form. It's not a question of belief or practice. Anybody can become conscious of the Supreme Absolute Reality while remaining within one's own traditions. You know, Srila Prabhupada was so open and candid. He was discussing in 1974 with his very good friends, those who were studying his movement in the early times, like Professor John Hopkins. He was from the Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Then this all in the United States, because the, what Prabhupada brought this tradition was beginning in 1965 until he departed, that is 1977. He made so many good Christian theologians, his friends and admirers. They gave a very good review about the philosophical treatise about the Supreme Personality that he presented. Thomas Hopkins, Harvey Cox from Harvard University, Divinity School, then Larry Shane, you know, he wrote a very famous book, My Dark Lord, you know, and Hare Krishna, the Counterculture. Then even Diana Ake, Stilton Judah was the professor emeritus in California University, based in Berkeley, you know. They were all present during that time in 1974 conversation, and Prabhupada so easily, you know, told them, like good friends and intimate. So You are all professors. You are all theologians. And you must know who God is. Right? And they started thinking what Srila Prabhupada wants to talk. And they said, Prabhupada, according to this tradition, this may be God. According to the perception of the other traditions, he may be God. Prabhupada said, no, theology means you must have known who God is. That is the premise of this study. If you can't say who God is, then you are all theosophists. You are only philosophizing rather than bringing a personality, because everybody believes in personal God, but they don't know who he is. So all right, so we do not know that who God is, but here I come, bring up a tradition and present you, here is God, here is Krishna. Krishna means God. See the attributes of personality. See the character that he really fulfills of all that is described about him in any tradition. And it was Thomas Hopkins says, Prabhupada, you are right. But how stupid we are all, that we do not want to accept, we don't want to come out from the framework of our little hemispheres. Because if we can think of expanding of the knowledge, it has no limits and we are baffled. We can't concentrate upon the divinity aspect and exhibit the personality, the divine personality. First of all, we do not know what is divine. Even we do not know what is right and wrong. Even we fail to know what is permanent and what is temporary. Actually, divinity begins from there. When we start thinking what is temporary, that is called asat, and permanent means sat. And only divinity is applicable to one which is permanent. The one which is temporary, changing, fleeting, then it is asat. The whole material world is made in that image of the Lord, and our body is part of that image too. But image is not real. It's an opposite thing. So, what is the real thing? The reality, for the real there is no cessation, and for the unreal there is no endurance. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate asat. Ubhayor api trashta anta tattva darshivihi. One should discern between real and unreal all the time. Because if we are real, then reality is our subject matter. That's how the thinkers start. That's how the thinkers start. And second thing, that the reality has to be exposed. What is real in me? what is unreal around me, or what we think that we are this, anything which is temporary cannot be understood as real. Temporary is temporary, it is not us. If we are real person, we must be permanent. So, these teachings are the onset of divinity, and divine has to be embodied. Therefore, this embodiment, if it is coming from a divine thing. So in human consciousness, we can think that we are all meant for some divine purpose. If we have highly developed consciousness, this is applicable to us, the divine consciousness. Krishna consciousness is divine consciousness. And therefore, out of that love that the Lord exhibits, He exposes this consciousness and asks His disciple Arjuna to always remain conscious of His reality. Material body is not all in all. And when Krishna descends, He doesn't come in a material body. He doesn't have to accept a material body. We are forced to accept, while He is not. So as to consider the Supreme Absolute Truth reality. Absoluteness is only present in the spiritual realm. It is not a product of material realm. Even though we have a concept of absolute, it's a make-believing. There is a concept of absolute even in temperature, in physics. And it has some figure of minus 238 or something like that. Who knows? Anybody is a physics student now? There is an absolute thing. It's a make-believe number upon which some calculations are done. But for the absolute, the attributes are also absolute. Anything pertaining to the absolute is also absolute in nature. And it is inconceivable through our five senses. Inconceivable. There is a principle that achintyaste khalu bhava tam starkena yojet. In the spiritual matters which are inconceivable, never try to apply logic. Why? Because prakrutebhya parebhyascha tam achintyaste lakshanam. The divine which is inconceivable is beyond the modes of material nature. So, through our body, the body is made up of material nature. It's a material body. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and ego. Even though it is subtle and very powerful, but yet it has a material conception. So, the idea is that how can we ever think of the Supreme in person, which is of absolute nature, and all divine attributes are there, and these attributes are, He has a name, form, qualities, and activities. Any object that we want to perceive, if Krishna is our objective, then He should have a name which is identical to His divine qualities. He should have the form which is also divine in nature. He has the qualities. They are not mundane qualities of material nature. And the activities that He performs, they are also divine. Therefore, the descriptions are there. It's not that I believe or you believe. They are transcendental in nature. So when Srila Prabhupada was presenting Krishna as the Supreme Person, the Absolute Truth, personified, this personality is unmatched. Is unmatched. Therefore he said to those professors, so here I bring Krishna. First of all, you do not know what this transcendental personality of God is. So here I bring. Why don't you accept? First of all, you do not know. But it doesn't mean nobody knows. So this is the premise that we have to understand. And this is applicable to every soul. Even though coming from different denominations of their belief system, they have to grow up. Because human civilization does not know limits. Because the consciousness is so much powerful and ever expanding. We want to explore the outer worlds by hook or crook. Cheating process is there. But rather, why to explore out? We have our inner world is also so much expandable. Therefore, the great thinkers, they use the knowledge aspect, meditation aspect, and bhakti aspect to know the Supreme Absolute Truth in person is the last word. So, when Srila Prabhupada wrote this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the preface he wrote that the conception of God and the conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are on two different levels. Anybody can present God according to their belief system, but verifiability about the transcendental nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth has to be exposed. Otherwise, there is so much chaos and so much fighting and so much dissension is going on. But he brought as a unifying aspect which can be explored through the transcendental nature of the consciousness, not material nature. Subject matter of God is not is subjected to a survey of opinions. These opinions may keep on changing according to the perception. In the survey it was said that people were relating about the current happenings. They were also telling that God is favoring right now to the Republican Party in America. Because somehow Bush is coming in the third term. But he is fighting with Iraq like anything. So God is favoring. So some people are perceiving God to be a favorable God. And they have to cast him in that category. They think America is still the powerful nation. So, God is all benevolent to them. We are subjecting God to our little or poor fund of knowledge. And that doesn't make anyone God. So therefore Prabhupada presented the conception of God and conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the personification of the Absolute Truth. Both are in different level. This consideration is something. And here, the entire treatise is written like a conversation in the great epic called Mahabharata, as Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. means the Supreme Personality of Godhead said. This is a very correct and devotional translation. You know, because the intricate nature of divinity can be only understood if one is not envious or competitive with the Supreme God. Krishna tells to Arjuna, I am teaching you the most confidential knowledge because you are not envious of me. That is first qualification. Second qualification was that you are bhaktosi sakha cheti rahasyam hetaduttam. You are my devotee. And second thing, you are my friend. So Prabhupada expands this. He says this particular verse that exposes Krishna, he's revealing the absolute truth about him to Arjuna. The idam tu te guhyatmam pravakshyami anasuyave jnana vijnana sahitam yajnatva mokshase shubham. Says, bhaktosi sakhachi iti rahasyam hetaduttam. And Prabhupada comments on this, that the most confidential knowledge, some knowledge is confidential, others is more confidential. But here he says, guhyatamam means most confidential knowledge about the personality. Why? Because he is a devotee. Who is a devotee and who is a demon? There are only two kinds of living entities in the whole material world. One is divine in nature, another is demoniac in nature. The divine qualities and demoniac qualities, if and more or less they are both harboring in ourselves. They are expressed as divine desires and demoniac desires. These desires are present, so these qualities are present, and therefore we must be casted like that. As for example, here we are assembled together to know something about God, or it is an association where Supreme Absolute Truth is being discussed. So naturally, that is divine. So we have this divine quality, and therefore this divine quality is making us possible to get together. But there are demoniac qualities also. Right now, certain qualities are superimposing, others are subordinate. So we may not be able to, okay. But when the demoniac qualities in us will rise, we will go to certain length that will forget even divinity. Oh, I don't believe in this, and I will change. We will somersault. This is the nature of jiva, or the soul. The soul is a marginal energy of the Supreme Whole. It's marginal energy. Sometimes on this side, sometimes on that side. Like a beach. Right now the tide is there, so it will be covered with water. In the morning we saw it was dry land. So, in this way, even though we are spirit, soul, part and parcel, you know, sometimes we exhibit divine, because that is our original nature. But as soon as we come out and we have to do with the worldly affairs, we think we are made up of the world, and world is our only resource. And we forget the divine existence, which is real and which is temporary. Again, we have to look into that. So to remain conscious about our reality is what makes our conception of God. This is all revealed by the Lord. Otherwise, we will not be able to verify our reality. The Lord is so benevolent. He is accompanying us as super soul. That is one of His expansions, while remaining Himself, His personality intact. That is the definition of the Supreme Absolute Truth, which is complete and perfect, even from whom everything is coming, is complete and perfect in nature, yet He remains individually complete and perfect. He is indivisible. The Supreme Absolute Truth also is revealed by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita on the same aspect. The premise was that, Arjuna, you have to approach a bona fide spiritual master, surrender to him, then manually serving him, you ask pertinent question till you are satisfied. And he will reveal you the Absolute Truth because he has seen the truth. Tad viddi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti tam jnanam jnanina tattva darshina. And what is that Absolute Truth? He says, yad gyatvanam punarmoham evam vyasyasi pandava. By revealing, he will reveal to you the Absolute Truth by knowing that you will never come in the illusion again. Illusion of temporality, illusion of the marginal energy, this side or that side. You will be so confirmed. He said, and what is that Absolute Truth? You will know it. Etanya bhutanya sheshani drakshat atmanyathomai. All the living entities are but my part and parcel. They are within me and they are mine. That means the Lord claims all the living entities, all His energies. So He is the supreme energetic, the personal, the personal. So in this way, there is also understood in the terms of religious evolution, the evolution of consciousness. Darwin must have told us only that the evolution of human species, by selection of species. Or in the Survival of Fittest treatise that he has written, that man has come out from monkeys. Prabhupada would tell, Darwin's father may be monkey, but my father was not. He said that. But the thing is that, that is simply a theoretical. And even though if he's correct, what about the consciousness, which is not part of this matter? He is ignoring that the divinity is ignored by him. Therefore, scientists are always almost atheist in nature. They don't give any predominance of the consciousness. But now they are baffled and they are teaching. There are chairs in the universities about the studies of consciousness, conscious studies. And even in India, our institute is having with Pilani, Rajasthan Institute, giving PhD and master's courses in conscious studies. Consciousness is an anti-material phenomenon. It has nothing to do with the matter. And there is an evolution of it. So, in our different religious beliefs, which is founded in one core, one root, that the root can be explored and we come to the original aspect of our surrendering. According to time, place and circumstances, these denominations are confined to preach, just to keep some harmony within the nature come by that understanding. But evolution of the consciousness is very, very required. And one who is inquisitive gets into the terms of the aspect of the at the soul level, at the level of the transcendence, and then can put everything in right perspective about Him and God, the Supreme Absolute, His Creator. This is how Bhagavad Gita has been placed. If He is very angry God, then He could have done everything by force. But Bhagavad Gita doesn't tell that. You know the background of Bhagavad Gita. In the background of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the mentor for Arjuna, who was confused in his duty at the very critical moment of life and death. There was a fratricidal war already set to begin. And the number of the soldiers on both the parties, they were simply burden on the earth. And they have to be wiped out. But the material attachment, the bodily attachment, for the so-called kind-hearted Arjuna, you know, put him into a confused state. So he has to take shelter of his friend and mentor, Krishna. Krishna could have forced him to fight, could have told him in the harshest possible word, without going through the whole conversation of 1.5 hours, I mean, to our estimation. If we read the whole Bhagavad Gita, there are 700 verses, and you can finish it in 1.5 hours. But can you imagine this kind of a private conference is going on in the middle of the two parties? And everybody is anxious, what is going on, what is going on. To start the battle, the bugles have already been blown up, you know, from both the parties. But somehow or another, Krishna and Arjuna, they were the right in the middle, and nobody knew what was going on, except, you know, Sanjay, by the mercy of his spiritual master, he was able to narrate to the blind Dhritarashtra. Look at that. The secretary has divine vision, and the master, his king, was blind. So what it means that a spiritual master can open the eyes of blindness of worldliness and give the divine vision. That is the possibility, and on that premises the disciplic succession from the guru to the shishya comes down. So Krishna would have immediately forced Arjuna without much argumentation, but no. That the whole conversation takes 1.5 hours just to convince him in the absolute way. And then Krishna asks him towards the end, Arjuna, have you heard properly what I said? Do you have any more argument? More questions? Is your illusion dispelled? Hmm? If you think so, then you do whatever you desire to do. Yathechasi tatha kuru. But because of most confidential knowledge which was imparted to Arjuna, he understood the position of the Lord. He is called Achyuta. Therefore he specifically calls Krishna with that name. What he says? Nasto moham smritir labdva tat prasada maya Achyuta. My dear Achyuta means infallible. The Lord is infallible. Because we are marginal, we are fallible. But the Lord is infallible. Therefore, Arjuna became infallible by accepting like this, that nasto moham smritir labdva. All my illusion has been finished. I regained my remembrance. Who am I? What is my nature? How am I connected with you? And what is my interaction with you? What am I supposed to do? By your mercy, my dear Arjuna, Achyuta, gata sandeha, all my doubts have been dispelled. Sthitoasmi, I am now steadfast. Karishye vachanantava, whatever you have said, I will execute. So this is the divine plan. It is revealed for all the living entities by executing our instructions in all the denomination. We should take the instruction and work it out. We must execute the commandments of the Lord. But if we are violators, John Milt was another Western philosopher. He said, no wonder we created 33 million laws just to execute 10 commandments, and yet we failed to execute even one. To disobey the orders of the Lord is one of the most root cause of our fallibility. And Arjuna is regaining that sense. So we try to improve our execution of religion in order to gain our divinity back. That a divine part and parcel of the Lord, qualitatively one with Him. Quantitative difference is there. We remain in a subservient situation and always remain in harmony with them. So that realm is of transcendence, because the Lord is supreme transcendence and we are part and parcel of Him. We are in harmony. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. This is the harmony state. We call it Shanti. Otherwise it's all chaotic, inside out. Everywhere it is chaos. Those who want to seek peace, they should know the peace formula. Krishna gives, just know three things. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarva bhutana gyatvam shantim ruchati. I am the enjoyer of all the sacrifices and works or homages or offerings. I am the only enjoyer, because I am the proprietor of all planetary systems. And therefore, just to support my parts and parcel, I am sitting in their heart as their well-wisher, guiding them. But they don't have any inclination to look towards me. Knowing this, that I am their well-wisher, three things. Gyatvam shanti mrichyate. Person will immediately get peace. Knowing means realizing. Knowing means realizing. That knowledge which is simply an information is unrealized information, has no value. It's a value like a storage in the memory bank outside artificial intelligence. It doesn't have any value. So anyway, Krishna spoke out of very loving attachment towards his disciple Arjuna. So he is also telling the same absolute truth for us to be revealed. There is nobody better benefactor than the Lord himself, and that we have to acknowledge. So I thank you very much. This is the introduction about the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the person who knows in the divine aspect of it, that janma karma cha me divyam evam vetyo tattvata. If one knows in divinity, means he has to develop his divine quality to know the Supreme Lord, who is all divine. So all his appearance and activities, which are divine in nature, if one knows in divinity, then by giving up this body, he will never come back into another material life. Tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mamiti. So, this is the perfection of human form of life. Anybody has any question? I have a question. How does divinity one can explore? What is the means to explore one's divine qualities? Can you do alone? It need help. A transcendental sound vibration is the help. It's identical in every respect. The holy name of the Lord is identical with his divine attributes, his form, his qualities and pastimes. As I said before, that is the objective. An object has these four connotations. We have a relationship, we have a process, and we have ultimate goal. And this is explored through the process of chanting the holy name, where Hare Krishna Mahamantra has been described in the Vedic, for especially this age, to cross over the ocean of ignorance. Ocean of ignorance. Therefore, the divinity can be explored only by the holy name in the beginning, and then you can employ other things. Therefore, we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Anybody has any question, comments? Yes.
You're talking about how there are different types of knowledge. So you mentioned how there's no value in having just knowledge without realization. So, but is there some value in having? Can that knowledge lead you to have realization?
Like you know, unless you employ it.
Unless you employ it,
there won't be realization. It's an information. There is a distinction between information and knowledge. If you have information of something, that doesn't mean that you are knowledgeable. You have to bring out, you have to employ in your life, and then verify it. That is called realization. It's not a question of belief. Therefore, in Sanskrit word, knowledge is gyan, right? But before gyan, the word comes understanding. Understanding is one aspect, knowledge is another aspect. In Hindi, it is said, Padhne ki had samaj hai. Padhna means study. What is the ultimate aim of study? Understanding. Not knowledge. Understanding. What is the limits of understanding? Realization. The ultimate aim of realization is what? Harina, chanting the holy name. Padhne ki had samaj hai, samaj ki had hai gyan, gyan ki had harinam hai, yahi siddhant ur aan. Apne hriday mein ye siddhant hona. Siddhiyon ka ant ko siddhant kehte hain. To Bhagwan ke naam mein kitni siddhi hogi? Uska upyog karna hai. Isiliye Prabhupada said that you can chant any holy name because all the holy names have all the potencies of the Lord invested in it. There are no hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Only thing is that we have no inclination to chant the holy name. That is our misfortune. Because these holy names are so much potent. Anybody can chant any holy name. But if you want desired result, and if you don't get, then please chant Hare Krishna and see for yourself. Yeah.
Is it okay after you chant, after you chant a few rounds of the mantra? Is it okay if you meditate for a while and say some of the knowledge and try and realize it afterwards?
In the beginning, we are advised to concentrate or meditate on the sound vibration itself. So the process of hearing, which is more powerful than any other sensual process, we have to utilize it at the maximum capacity.
So does that mean while you're chanting you've got to ignore all sensory input from outside and just think of nothing but the sound?
Right, the sound vibration. So, shravanam means hearing comes first, then kirtanam means vibrating the holy name, and then remembrance. And try to employ other senses by taking beads, like sense of touch will rotate the bead. Alright? So there are, you can think of that conception is there, that the beads are individual maid servant of Krishna, and it's a dancing situation of 108 gopis, right? So, but that's a meditation. But you employ the sense of touch. If it is tulsi bead, you employ your nose in smelling the aroma of tulsi. Then you see through your eyes that you chant diligently one mantra on one bead. Otherwise, you know, your mind will drag you. If you close any of the sense in engagement, then it will slip away. You might, you know, chant few, one mantra and 2-3 beads will slip away from your hand. So you have to engage your eyes, engage your tongue in chanting clear, you know. So the taste of the holy name should be there. What is the proof that you are getting a taste of the holy name? You will chant more. Chanting begets chanting. That is called taste. So, all your senses have to be engaged. That is called devotion. Unless you engage all these 5 senses, your mind is going to cheat you.
In other words, you have to control the whole body.
Yes.
Use it like a tool.
Naturally, it is a practice. It's a one who chants in mind, don't believe him. You know, only liberated person can chant in the mind constantly. You know,